I've never shared this with anybody publicly. There's so many things happening in this conversation right now. 1,000 years from now, people are going to be looking at this podcast saying, so this was the breakthrough.
If this was SportsCenter, that would be like such a hot take. Skip Bayless would have no idea. Stephen A. Smith would have no idea what to say if you drop that down. That is so good.
Yeah, I actually, this is my third bottle. So I misunderstood the instructions and the premise of the podcast interview.
The joke I always say is like, how'd you learn so much? Got to drink a lot.
The power of food and beverage to lubricate an environment.
Resistance to change is hurting the church.
I'm not in the camp that God has a penis or a vagina or a body at all. I'm in the camp that God is a universal spirit.
This is the strangest podcast that I have been on. I don't even know what to do.
I'm kind of geeked up about this wine.
You've uncovered the mystery. You've exposed the formula.
You've just duct taped together a number of things that aren't normally hanging out together, and I'm here for it.
We're going to sit down at a table. We're going to have a glass of wine and some food, and we're going to talk about the beauty of Jesus.
Thank you for the hospitality that this particular podcast provides folks like myself, and I know others, to be curious around their faith practices.
I will never forget the first time I bought a bottle of wine by myself, which was yesterday.
If you're familiar with drunk history, I thought it's like drunk theology. So I...
Whew. By the way, drinking this Pinot Grigio at 3 o'clock in the afternoon is making me even more direct in my communication than I normally would be.
Welcome to Cabernet and Pray, episode 18. Today, we get to dive into a conversation with a longtime friend of mine named Nate Ross. And this one is cool because Nate and I's journey has overlapped in a variety of ways. We both grew up the son of a pastor, both ended up working for our dads in ministry. We both went on to become lead pastors, and then we both stepped away from the lead pastor role and are now pursuing something else. And so literally I've walked with Nate through so many of these seasons together. And he is just one of my favorite people. And I thought it would be so fun to get to unpack his journey with you today. A little bit about Nate. He was born in the Midwest. He lived in Vegas as a teenager, and he settled down in the booming metropolis of Sellersburg, Indiana, which is 8 miles north of Louisville. He's married to Ruthie. They have 3 kids together. He had been in local church ministry for 17 years. He was a lead pastor in a church of over 6,000 people that was twice named one of the top 100 fastest growing churches in America. And then last year, he stepped out of his lead pastor role to start an organization called Moments to Movements that is all about helping leaders navigate personal and organizational change. Nate is one of those guys. He is immensely likable, which is interesting with the story he's going to tell. And it's just a guy that exudes love. And when you're with him, you're encouraged. You like him. You're just like, I want more of this guy. He's got so much to offer. And I hope you enjoy episode 18. All right. Welcome to the podcast, Nate Ross.
Hey-o.
So great to have you. This is fun. A lot of times I interview people I don't know already. So it's my first introduction. Nate and I go way back. This is a bro of mine. So I'm excited. This is more like just for me, like to catch up with a good friend of mine. And I'm recording it in case you say anything brilliant.
Oh, boy.
Which you've been known to do. So I just view this as you and I having a glass of wine together. And we're just going to record it and we'll let people listen in and hopefully you'll drop some of your truth bombs that you normally drop. And we're all just going to write them down and then be better for it. How's that sound?
I'm game with it, man. And just a chance to catch up with you. This is a mutually selfish thing, man, to get a hang with you and catch up and chat with you. So this is great.
All right. That sound, Nate, means we need to talk about what we're drinking. I'll go first. I'll describe it, and then we'll see what you do with this.
All right.
Today, I am drinking a 2019 Thorne Clark Shotfire Shiraz, that's a fun wine to say. This is what they call Syrah from Australia. For those of you who are like, what's a Shiraz? It's a Syrah, but when you're in Australia, you got to do things a little fancy. So that's what I'm drinking today, a delightful, bold red. As I was tasting this, I got blackberry, plum, olive, leather, and vanilla bean. So hello. I'm getting lots of fun things. Nate, what are you drinking today?
So this is why I picked this one. One, it's the only bottle of wine I had in my house. That does help
you select a little bit.
But here's why. This is our table wine that primarily if we're gonna have a glass of wine, it's because Ruthie's making Italian or something. But this is our like table wine. It's J. Lure. Am I saying that right? J. And then
it's Lure.
Lure. See,
I think so. But I here's what I've learned with wine names, Nate. You just say it with a little bravado and confidence, and people assume you know what you're talking about. And I've had to like pronounce some gnarly Italian names, and I don't know what I'm talking about, but I just say it like it's cool. Then people are like, oh, wow. He really knows how to say that. Really? And then, you know, an expert's like, that is not how you pronounce that.
That's not the one. Actually, it's from Seven Oaks, and I can pronounce that. So
there you go. Build on that.
So I'm gonna stay there with the Seven Oaks. It is a cab, a 2020. And what I get notes of when someone's like, well, why is this like your kind of table wine is there's a buttery finish. So I don't know where that fits in the wine category, and that'll probably get me kicked out of your events that you have. You're like, sir, no refund, leave now. But I love it, easy. And then I think it's only like $15, $16 a bottle, something like that at the grocery store. So it's an easy pickup. But literally, this is like our favorite if we're going to have a glass of wine at dinner. So this is why I feel like you are in my house right now. We're sitting at the table hanging. This is what I would pour you.
Cheers. I like it. We'll go with that. So Nate and I got some good wines. We're ready to roll. Nate, you and I were in a mentor group together many years ago. This is where we got to develop our budding friendship. I have a lot of memories from those times. I'm curious, what do you remember from those mentor groups? What stands out to you when you think back on those times?
Well, a couple things. One, like, what an incredible gift to sit with those mentors both. And we got to hang with Mark Scott and then Dr. Walker as well, both at the Blessing Ranch, one in Colorado, one in Florida. But to me, because I'm such a relational people, it's like, if I can be with the right people, that makes everything. And so for me, my biggest takeaway is like, there was so much wisdom that was shared. And there's so many times, I mean, even remembering how you guys would handle confrontation as a staff, like the whole open hand thing. And hey, I'm about ready to say something tough. I need you to receive this. Like just learning incredible wisdom from people was the highlight for me. Like it was beyond anything for me. So.
I think I remember like the food we ate and the wine we drank and the cigars and, you're holier than I am. I remember the fun stuff that we did. Got to sit out in that patio and, you know, just unpack life together. And the context of it was Nate and I both grew up as preacher's kids and had worked on staff for our dads. And, you know, the kind of in the future was this idea that we were going to be lead pastors. So this is like early on in our ministry careers. And so there's this group of us. Originally, it was all preacher's kids, as I recall. That was the first group. And then you and I turned into a second group that was just kind of more broad, like future lead pastors. And those were fun times. And it was fun to, in real time, work through, you know, the issues we had, the hiccups, the challenges we were trying to figure out, and then to, you know, obviously glean from incredible mentors. But, you know, get to do it alongside people like you. Was super cool. So I was curious what you thought back on those days. And I want to paint a little picture because I don't know how long ago that was. I don't know if you could guess, like, what year did you and I meet? You have any guess? I got nothing. I'm really bad at time. I'd be like, I don't know, 10 years.
I am. I like, I, yeah, especially in ministry, man. Sometimes ministry feels like dog years. So you're like, that was just 1 year. No, that was one year.
It felt like 100. So here's my question, because you and I were not the same people. We were in those circles. And so I'd love to hear from you. This is a question I like asking people on this. How has your faith changed? Let's just say over the last 10 years, to pick the last decade, how would you describe your faith being different than it was 10 years ago?
Man. Yeah, I will say probably the biggest thing that has changed is my starting point from my faith. I really wasn't aware of it. I'm so grateful for the family I've grown up in. I'm so grateful for the work ethic. But one of the biggest things that I've grown in is my awareness of how much the family I've grown up in has formed me, and even how much where I start just as a person has formed me, and how much, in a lot of ways, I'm not blaming anybody, but how much I was actually deformed by starting there. So what I mean is this, like, ministry for me, or my faith, would rise and fall on my passion, effort, energy, zeal. Even this is something I say too, like, part of my brokenness and like broken metaphor that I realized is, even in, like, never even dated, like, college, really. And it's not because I didn't want to, just like, you're going to screw this whole thing up. I'm going to hold off here. So he was like, this is for your good. And, but I remember, like, this was the brokenness of my metaphor, is like, if you work hard enough, everything will work out. And if things aren't working out, work harder.
Do you think that's from, like, Christian culture itself?
That's why I'm like, I don't have anybody to blame, or, you know, any of that. I just go, I've just become more aware of not even saying that I would believe that, but I would just live that. Like, this was my own, I don't know, self-righteousness maybe, or, you know, like, just my MO, my starting point was always that. And part of it is because people reward drive or my charisma, you know. Like, I suck at social media, so I'm not trying to, like, you know, point all roads back to me or something like that, or just, like, promote my highlight reel. But there was always a thing of, like, that was the starting. And gradually what's just happened over and over again is there's been so many things that have not worked out despite me working harder. And the Lord's like, what are you going to do with that? like, how does that fit in your faith paradigm of, well, you're working hard and it's not working out. What's wrong with you? And that's really been the journey for me, even in this last season of stepping out of the lead pastor role. Don't regret it. Not sad that I did it, but just realizing, like, there's certain gifting and callings and things, and even assignments that the Lord gives, that it's like, this doesn't rise and fall on your effort and energy. And that's been like, whew, okay. Like, I've just had to, and again, I'm not, and that's why I don't want to miss if that has been facilitated, but I just know in my own soul, that was core to me. And part of that was just how you would just navigate. Probably also because I was 5 foot tall as a freshman in high school, and you had to work harder than everybody else and at everything. Like,
you were not 5 feet tall
as a freshman. Totally.
Really?
Oh yeah. And then people would call the house and I would answer, and I'd be like, hello. And they'd be like, Rachel, it's my sister. No, this is Nathan. Like, it just is this whole, like, you know,
so you're 5 feet tall and you had a high voice.
High voice, late bloomer, April birthday. And so my best days of sports were in elementary, you know, I was better than everybody then. And then sixth grade, it was just a disaster. And I don't believe in purgatory, but I'm pretty sure junior high could be it for me. It was, it was just a disaster. But I think that was the biggest formative time. And I look back to stuff like that, even like you just, you know, those situations for me. And you, I'm sure you've experienced this a little bit. I don't want to speak for you, but there was a bunch of things that like energy and effort, especially when it came to faith, it did provide a lot of opportunities. It did create, and I'm a big believer in give your best effort, give your, you know, work hard, man, you know, don't let, you know, the let you, you won't labor in vain, but you know, work, but beneath it, faith wise, I really believed probably, too much of the success was built on my effort rather than the faithfulness of Jesus and trusting
that. I mean, you're making me think of like all of the, you know, the conferences we used to go to all the time and all of these, you know, established, hey, I've arrived, I've made it, here's what I did. And I, you know, I've looked over my notes from like conferences I would attend over the years, and it's all these action steps of like, I gotta be better at this, and I gotta do better at this. Oh. And there definitely is that undercurrent of like, yeah, just try a little bit harder, and you'll be as successful as the other people, and God's gonna bless it.
Yeah. Yes. And then when it doesn't, I mean, that was, you know, that was the most disorienting season for me. Even as a lead pastor through COVID, I mean, dude, I've never been so disliked in my life. And that was part of the thing that I got to the core, to the root of it. I got one just phenomenal leadership coach that I've been journeying with for 2 years and actually doing some work with him now. But, you know, he made me write out the word dislike on a piece of paper. And we're talking, you know, challenging stuff here, and put it in my pocket and walk around with it for an entire month.
Whoa.
And he was like, I want you to like, it was almost like a conscious journal of like, when that sense of dislike was there, what's going on?
Why that sounds so powerful to me, knowing you, is that you're one of the most likable people I've ever met. And you are the guy, and I've always envied this about you. You are the guy that everybody that I know knows you. And you always will be like, oh, you know, so-and-so. And I'd be like, Nate, I don't know who that is. You'd be like, well, you know, my friend so-and-so. I'd be like, Nate, I don't know who that is either. And like, you know, everybody. And then if I ever drop your name of like, oh yeah, I was talking to Nate Ross. I mean, almost anybody would be like, oh, I love Nate. So like, that is just like, that's, you know, the irony of you saying you're not good on social media. It's because you're so good in real life. You don't need social media. Social media is for the introverts who we lock up in social settings, but I can post, right? You are the guy like, why would I need it? I'm going to befriend every single person in that room. Right. So that is so amazing that was what you were instructed to do. Like, knowing how likable you are.
And so like, literally for me, I use social media to learn, not to connect. It's funny you say that. And it's not because I would be anti-connecting. I just don't message anybody. It's always this, I'm learning. I mean, that's why I watch your show. That's why I watch all the, you know, everything where I'm like, it's my way to stay connected because that fuels my heart. But Dave Ryder is his name. He's just a great friend and now, you know, leadership coach, and get to be one of his associates is one of the things I do. And his big verse that he introduced me to was Proverbs 20 verse 5, where it says the purposes of a person's heart are deep waters, but a person of understanding draws it out. And his whole thing is like, cause I you're just frantic. All these things are coming up and it's not just COVID or any of that type of stuff. It's just, there's just seasons where, and he's like, Nate, it's not that people need to learn how to get deep. He's like, they just haven't had access to their deep waters yet. And he's like, and so that whole thing of dislike was me learning to get access to the deeper waters. And he's like, this is what continues to be, because really what I would find is this. So I was in a cohort with them, is him and then another Christian psychologist. So it was like taking organizational leadership with Christian psychology and bringing them together. And her name's Jules Wilhelm, and she would just call me out. She's like, "You're coping right now." And I'm like, "No, I'm connecting right now with people." She's like, if she would just watch it in a group setting, I would say something, and then someone would push back, and I'm like, "Well, you know, yeah, you're probably right. You know, I see where you're coming from, Jeremy." She'd be like, "Why are you coping?" I'm like, "I'm not coping. Because I'm like, I'm not smoking cigarettes right now. I'm fine, right? You know, I'm like, that's the only way people cope with stress or something." And she's like, "No, you cope way more than you realize, and you just relationally just kind of, hey, ho, ho, as long as everybody likes you and you're good, I'm good, we're all good." And then she's like, "But you're not good. You're not good. Like, things are in you, and that's not good. And you're just making sure." And again, all of this has been this, you know, look at the questions you're asking, Jeremy. All of this gets to the deeper things of the faith journey and what's getting revealed and what we've been living with, but we're not even aware of, you know, or even given access, the ability to access it, you know, and go, "Yeah, that's not good in me. That's not healthy in me. That's not of the Lord, you know, it's just of the flesh or whatever." But so it's been a wild road.
Why do you think more people are reluctant to do that work themselves? Because I think you and I have had similar journeys in a sense where, you know, when I stepped away from being lead pastor, I felt this strong sense of I should not go run back into another role somewhere else. You know, like that would not give me the space to like sit in that and ponder it and learn from it and grow from it. And, you know, I think a lot of times people go from like one wound to another wound, right? And would never spend the time to figure out, what am I feeling right now? What is it revealing to me? What am I learning about God? Well, you know, all of this, because it's not pleasant, you know. I would say sitting in that space was not at all pleasant, but that was the catalyst for me to become a different version of myself. And, you know, I'm biased. I would say a better version. I like this version of myself better. But it took sitting in that space. What do you think, like someone's listening to this, watching this, they're like, "Oh, cool. I want to have that." And maybe they're recognizing their own need for that of like, I kind of relate to this. Like I'm coping. Mm-hmm. What do you think maybe can help people do that work themselves?
Well, I think one, some folks long for it, but like even that verse said, it's like there's a person of understanding that helps draw it out. And I think part of it is some folks are like, "I'm open for it." They just don't have somebody, a guide yet, or a pastor in their life, or someone of wisdom who can help draw that out. And so proximity to that. And so the desire's there. They just don't have, you know, they're like, "Dude, I listen to so many podcasts." I'm like, that's a one-way street. Like right now, they're just listening to us. We're not facilitating a conversation and sitting and listening. And so proximity to healthy people is one. Another one is, I think we're afraid of what we'll find. I think people are going to have to go back to childhood stuff. Literally, I mean, this is full transparency. You ready? Like, I didn't plan this, but we're just going to go there. So that counselor, Jules Wilhelm, she really went to it. She's like, "I want you to think the earliest time in your life that you were afraid of people's dislike." And I was like, "Okay." She's like, "Close your eyes." This is over Zoom, by the way.
Oof.
Not even in person. And okay. And I closed my eyes and I'm just thinking. And I went back to, and the thing is, I joke about this story. This is what's so funny. I'll tell the story to people and I've laughed for years about the story, but I had no idea what was going on in it. And I was brand new. I just moved from Louisville, Kentucky to Bloomington, Indiana, God's country. And Southern Indiana. And, I was nine and was still wetting the bed. Super embarrassing, right? And so I would always go and play at friends' homes, but hey, we have something to do early in the morning. So I'd have to always leave at 11, right? And this one time it was all the baseball players from our team that were staying over there. And I was like, I want to do it. My mom's like, I don't know, you know, if you wet the bed there. And so she lined my sleeping bag with plastic. I don't know what that was going to do for it, but it was like catching or whatever. Like, my mom is the sweetest, so she lines it. I stay up to like 4 in the morning thinking like I won't fall asleep, wake up at 6:30, and I had wet the bed. All the baseball players are asleep in the basement. So I go upstairs, I grab a Mountain Dew, and I crack the Mountain Dew and pour it all over myself, and I wake a buddy up, and I'm like, oh, man, I poured Mountain Dew. I was trying to take a drink. I poured Mountain Dew all over myself. He goes, oh, man, it looks like you wet the bed. I go, I know. Oh, man. You know, just to cover the mess. And she's like, one, that's very fast thinking. Very good. And she goes, so let's now invite God into that basement with you. What does he have to say to 9-year-old me, who's afraid of the entire baseball team rejecting him in a new town, very few friends? You're just trying to be like, you're just trying to, dude, I just start weeping, man. She's like, ask him what he wants to say to you right now. Oh my Lord, what do you want to say to me right now? And like, I'm just weeping, man. And I hear him. He's like, I'm not embarrassed of you. I'm not abandoning you. And I'm ready to move you forward.
Whoa.
Like, I mean, even just now, like, and I've told that story as a joke. It's funny. Like, I had no idea. Like how that moment, like we talk about those things we're not aware of, like how much there's no church hurt there. You know what I'm saying? Like there's no Christian culture hurt me. These are like just childhood things that we walk through, leave a mark on us, that have made us afraid, that have, and not that everybody has to go to their deepest, darkest thing, but she knew like, if you're really going to deal with this, you got to go to these experiences, man. And you got to have God speak into you. Like not just some cliche scriptures, like what does he want to tell you? And like, I can recite those clear as day, not because I'm articulate or whatever. That was the heart of God, is like, dude, I was with you there. And like, even in the future, like, I'm not embarrassed of you, man. Like, I didn't abandon you in that basement. And I'm ready to move you forward. And I just go, I think for a lot of us, we don't want to go there. And that's the thing, is it's some of us, we know those instant, like those moments that did create that thing. Like I wasn't even aware. She just asked a question. Think as far back as you possibly could. Like that was it. Think as far back as you possibly could about the potential of not being liked or being disliked. And it was just getting to that. And I'm just learning that stuff hangs with us. It fuels us. It teaches us how to navigate those tough things. And I think those are some of it. It's like people of wisdom around us. And then the fear of being vulnerable. And I think that just the last one is just a loss of control.
Yeah.
Cause if you get faced with it, you may lose control. And so let's just not deal with it, because it could control, like a loss of control can be costly.
Well, no one wants to feel like that 9-year-old again.
Oh my gosh. No, man. you know, and so, no, that was in the past. I dealt with that. I survived it. I navigated it. I don't need to revisit it. And it's like, well, it's visiting you every day. Mm-hmm. It's shaping your decision. It's keeping you from moving into rich relationship or wholeness or all sorts of things. And, but I think those are the top three things, at least for me, that I've found, you know, through them.
What's your relationship with Mountain Dew these days?
Oh, abandoned it. No, I did take a drink.
Trigger for you or like too like, soon?
Yeah, like you see it and you're like, oh, no, I did take a drink of the Mountain Dew Zero the other day. I'm like, man, they're honing it in for us 40-year-olds. They're really getting.
Dude, you're so funny. I feel the same way. My guilty pleasure, like we go to Taco Bell or something because, you know, we don't have time. It's like, hey, let's just grab something. Dude, they've got all sorts of Mountain Dew Zero flavors there. And I'm like, they have captured my childhood and lessened the sugar. And I understand it's fake sugar, whatever. It's not good for you. I'm not saying I drink it every day. I'm just saying when you need your chalupa and you need to wash it down with something, that Mountain Dew Zero is pretty tasty.
At 11 o'clock at night as well. I mean, like everything, like, yeah, it's always later. It is, man. I just speaking of that, like I find what's funny is watching marketing. You know, I got three kids now and Ruthie and I do. And it's like, everything is being marketed to you and I now. And I just crack up, man. I'm like, we're now the ones who are paying for everything for our kids. And so they're like, we're going to appeal to these guys in their 40s because they're going to buy this crap. Yeah, and childhood.
I love it. You know, it's all the Super Bowl the Super Bowl halftime, you know, we're finally the target audience. We're like, these have finally gotten good. It's like, no, they're just, we've reached the age.
No. You know,
we're old enough now. We're like, oh, these are our people. We like these
guys.
That's
right.
I love it. Okay, so you and I have a lot in common. We grew up preacher's kids, both have that. Worked for our dads in ministry, both had that. Both became lead pastors, both have that. Both left the role of lead pastors. So, I mean, literally, there's a lot of connecting points there. You go, oh, you guys have a lot in common. I mean, for us to follow this trajectory, that's why I was like, this will be a fun conversation. I have noticed, and I'm curious your take on this because this is something I'm working through. So I need you to enlighten me on this. You've probably figured this out. I look at how my kids are growing up. And it is so different than how I grew up. You know, I grew up with my dad, you know, preaching every week. I was at church multiple times a week. My kids are not growing up with that now, you know, and so we've had a different experience. And I just can't help but like mentally compare that. And then you ask the question, you mentally like, hey, am I giving them an adequate experience? Is this it's different? It's not, you know, like I grew up knowing the Bible. Like inside and out, because that was a culture I was raised in. And, you know, we had Bible drills and memorized verses and just all of it. My kids don't know the Bible like I knew it at their age. You know what I mean? And so I'm looking at that and I'm like, no, I don't think that's the end all goal is to like have the Bible memorized because there's a lot of awful people who are very proficient in the Bible. But, you know, it does kind of cause me pause. Because you have such a similarity in your own journey with your kids, do you ever have that thought? Like, do you look at your kids and how are you navigating how different they're growing up than the way you grew up?
Oh, yeah. No, I think about it all the time. I'm like, I remember I memorized all the books of the Bible second grade. This morning.
I don't have a vivid memory, but I probably did.
I remember, you know, but that was part of the Sunday night church thing. And, you know, like what you said, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, that was the routine. And even this morning, yeah, I got up, today's our first day back from spring break and, you know, got up, read, had my quiet time and it was 1 Corinthians 15 and go down and wake up my daughter for sixth grade. And I'm like, hey, remember, you know, because of Jesus, we don't labor in vain today. You know, just trying to encourage her and, you know, as we go back to work and different stuff. And she's leaving the house and she's like, yeah, Dad shared a scripture with me today. And Ruthie goes, oh, yeah, what was it? I don't know. It just walked out. And I'm like, awesome. And you just like,
I think.
And I'm like, I was waking her up. So I'm like, she's, you know, like.
Yeah, that was it. We'll say that was it.
Know, but it is. I do feel it. Two things. I do feel I'm going to have to pastor them differently in the way of like meeting them, walking with them. And it really is. What's kind of fun is the hope is, at least for me, is it's really a return to that Deuteronomy 6 model. When you lie down, when you wake up, when you go to work, when you're doing that, like it is this finding ways to bring scripture into this. Ruthie and I read a daily devotional thing together just to encourage each other, have stuff to talk about. And we're trying to share that a little bit with Lily as well and reading stuff together. And I'm finding this is like, it's happened to ramp up compared to that idea of just a couple of times a week at church, because it was ingrained. It's like, we are going to have to forge a new path of family rhythms that on the way to travel ball after travel ball, you know, Lily, she doesn't do travel cheer. Her school team, they just won state for like their third time in a row. And so it's like the cheer team for this, for the school is enough, like competitive enough, you know, where it's like, we're not into all the travel stuff, but I'm going, people are going to have to go, dude, like you're going to have to figure out, you're not going to wait for the idea that you're just going to get your kid to church and it's all going to change. It's like, you're going to have to change the entire rhythm of how much you were talking about this, the moments that you create, what you're putting, you know, your time to, that has changed drastically. And then the thing is for us, I'm not here to just raise the banner, but it's like, she's the only kid on the cheer team who doesn't have a phone. You know, there is anxiety that's coming from not having a phone now that you got to like think about. And so our happy medium is we got her an Apple Watch, you know, so we can lock it down. It gives the look that she does have a phone, but she doesn't. And at the same time, she can still text with the right friends, you know, all that other stuff. And so but there's a whole thing of like, we're going to have to create this discipleship thing. And then we are going to have to be real intentional with the digital engagement. And you're watching this everywhere. I mean, even non-Christian folks are like, yeah, we got a problem. We got a massive problem. So I think that's where, for me, I'm just stepping into it. I don't, and then, you know, this all, cause you got 5 kids, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they're not the same. None of them. Like how you're going to just, how you're going to walk and talk with, and what they, you know, my older two are like super loving, and Zeke is a loving kid, but like, hey buddy, come give me a hug. And he'll like, just lean into me. Like he's like, you can see me, but I don't know about this whole hugging thing. And I'm like, buddy, you know, and I'm like, just new styles. But I'm learning, like, this is going to have to be talked about way more than what I'm accustomed to. Cause you were getting that message 3 times a week growing up. And now it's like, we're going to have to cultivate the message all the time. So,
you know, even the parents who, you know, are watching this, listening to this, who are not in ministry roles, this is one of the top questions I get asked. Like when we do a communion event and we don't open up the Q&A, almost every time there's a parenting question of what the heck, how do we raise our kids? You know, where a lot of people too, the evangelical church as it is no longer an option, you know, for a lot of reasons. And so they're going, hey, we don't feel like that's going to do it. And then they're trying to figure out like, how do we, you know, do that? And it's very tricky. One thing I'll just say, and this is going to sound like a sponsor is speaking in here. I don't get paid for this. I should. And if they're listening, I would. I'm not above it. But have you heard of the Gab phone, G-A-B-B?
No.
I'm going to drop this for you, Nate, and for anyone listening.
I'm writing it down.
And Gab, if you're listening as well, call me. But Gab phones are, I think they're actually a Mormon company. But they are basically, they look like smartphones, but they're not. So they can do all the basic phone features, but they lock them down as far as what they're able to do. And then very heavy on the way the parent, restrictions can work. And so what we decided, so our older three each have a Gab phone. they are 12, 13, and 15. Because that way, if they're out at an event or whatever, they want to call, they want to text, they can do all that. They have the phone, right? But it does no social media. It does none of the, you know, the crazy stuff, limits, like even like video chats, doesn't do that. Yeah. So for us, that's been a very good, happy medium. Now, again, if we said to any of them, hey, would you want an iPhone? All of them would be like, yeah, dump this stupid Gap phone, right? But we've kind of found a good, happy medium where this allows you to still connect, but we're keeping you from that. And my goal is just like, I'm going to keep you with a Gap phone as long as I physically can. And you know, my 15-year-old, obviously our oldest, he's the one that pushes it the hardest. And I'm like, look, the rest of your life, you're going to be inundated with all this stuff. I'm like, just be a kid right now. And I'm like, I'm not trying to like stop you from experiencing the world. I'm like, you're going to have the rest of your life to deal with that. I'm like, but you're 15 right now. Like, just enjoy being 15. You'll never go back to this. And so maybe check it out. It sounds like you got to with your Apple Watch.
I'm sitting here. I'm trying to find it. Like I took a picture of this and I'll probably miss it, but there's Rainn Wilson. It's amazing that you're quoting that. And I must've lost it, but Rainn Wilson just promoted a book. I was just following on social media. I think it's The Anxious Child or The Anxious Generation, and everything that you just brought up. It's like, this is it. Like, these are the things Christian, non-Christian kids, and everybody's trying to figure this out. I hadn't heard about that, but I believe it. And it was because what you were saying about your kid being 15, they were talking about like no iPhone before 16. That's what I was looking at. Like was one of their things. And then they were talking about like no social media till like college. Cause they're like, you are not ready for it.
Yeah.
Mentally, emotionally, this isn't about, we're trying to keep all the fun from you. It's like devastating implications. So.
Well, going to school, you know, our kids go to public school. That's hard enough. You know, all the drama, the dynamics of all that. And it's like, look, just be present, be that. And we'll add stuff on as you get older and gets more complicated. I do want to spend a moment, though, talking a little bit about your transition out of ministry. It's been an interesting theme of a number of guests of this show. A number of guests have been full-time lead pastors and are no longer in that role. And so I just have found that these conversations are often very intriguing for a variety of reasons. You had a phrase, I can't remember where I saw this, but I saw that you wrote this somewhere. And again, I wrote it down. You said, I grew up in a ministry home, but ministry is not my home.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, that's good. It's catchy. It's good. You can tell preacher came up with that. I grew up in a ministry home, but ministry is not my home. Also hits me because it's my story as well. Talk a little bit about why did you step away from that role? Why did you not go back into that role somewhere else?
Yeah. Even just explaining that was, I was down at the Blessing Ranch. When I'd stepped out, the elders were kind and gave me a provision. They go, hey man, figure this next season out. Let us create some funds for you to be able to do that. And that was one of the things they wanted to encourage Ruthie and I go do, just to dream and go plan. Cause it'd be easy if it was one thing where I'm like, you know, like if Zondervan or whoever came to you and was like, Jeremy, here's a 5-book deal and we want you to do this, this, and this. And you're like, I need to step out of my lead pastor role. You know, not even that would be so easy, but the transition would be a little bit easier, right? But when the Lord calls you out of some things and it's to the unknown, you know, it's like, uh-oh. And I got down there and Charity at the Blessing Ranch asked, she's like, how do you think this will impact your family, this change? And it just got me thinking. And I was sitting at a coffee shop one morning doing the prep work before going into a session, literally last Friday, it was the 1-year anniversary. And I feel like the Lord gave me that phrase. I was sitting in the coffee shop and I was just thinking about the family and I'm thinking about, you know, cause there's a sense of failure that's associated with this. Mm-hmm. Like
for a lot of
my dad's been in ministry for 47 years, all 41 years of my life has always been in the church. I went to Bible college for this. Everything I've done is for this. And now I'm not going to do this. So, and then back to, if you work hard enough. So you're lazy, Ross, or what, you know, whatever it is.
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? Why couldn't you give a better effort? Why couldn't you preach a better sermon? Whatever. And you just sit there. And I remember just going like, that whole line is like, I grew up in a ministry home. And I just kept writing in the journal. I'm like, and I felt like the Lord was like, but ministry is not your home. I am your home. Ministry, like, there's a calling to it. There's a vocation to that. There's a stewarding of the gifts that you have. But that is not your home. And I'm not mad at the church. I'm not anti mega church. I'm not anti lead pastor. I don't regret being a lead pastor. Church is in a great spot. You know, it's like, we're like, that's where everyone's kind of like, what are you doing, man? Like, you're just coming in into this, you know? But what, you know, I don't normally get to spend this much time with folks as much as I want to, but it was a 3-year wrestle for me before I stepped out. You know, because even when I left church, I was at in Illinois for youth ministry, there was nothing wrong. I just realized I'm more generalist than specialist. And so I stepped out, didn't have a job. Then my buddy actually emailed me the job description at my home church, and it was for an associate of involvement. It wasn't even the involvement minister. It was just the associate. But they were like, you're not in charge, and you don't, like, there's no preaching with this. And I'm like, I don't care. It's with people all the time, helping them take their next step, creating opportunity. I'm like, yes. So, like, that was why I even came home. Everybody's like, well, no, you came here to take over for your dad. I'm like, I came here to be the involvement associate. Like, I didn't, there was no plan. And then, you know, kind of roles just kept moving into it. The biggest thing for me, though, was, and you talk about you and I being different. That's part of the gifting, is it's like, you don't need to be somebody else. You need to live in the gifting that God has created you in. I love John Thompson in his book, Convergence. He's a pastor up in Canada. I've gotten to know the last year, and really amazing thinker. He said, Jesus lived by this kind of, like, these three frameworks. I thought it was great. His spiritual gifts, spiritual disciplines, and then obeying the promptings of the Holy Spirit was how he worked. His whole book on the convergence, we want a movement of the Spirit, but he's like, we got to understand how the Spirit works within that. And the hardest part for me for those 3 years, I was the lead pastor for 5, but the majority of my time was spent writing sermons, which I'm not against sermon writing, but that was probably maybe my third best gifting, but demanded my most time. Mm-hmm. And how I'm wired, if I had time, I'd show you my culture index, or basically it just revealed, like, I was on my way to burnout. Like, I was burning twice as much fuel as I had in my tank. I was not getting to do how things I was wired. And the elders were fine. I was bringing in guys like Mike Bro and Ephraim Smith, because I'm like, I can't spend this much time by myself preparing a sermon. Preaching is a monologue, not a dialogue. And then when you have to recover, you recover by yourself. And some people are like, I know, that sounds amazing. And I'm like, you know, they're like, that's why I got into preaching. And I just went, how I'm wired, and even what the Lord's created and called me into next. That was my biggest thing. Is now, as I'm going for a couple of years, I'm like, okay, I've got to change this, or I got to tweak this. And really what was happening was there was some gifting where I'm like, I'm not getting to do what I'm really best at. And I'm okay to go again. I don't think there needs, I think there was two things too. One, I needed to continue to change how it was structured. Like, I love Daryl Land in Jasper, Indiana. He's the lead pastor, planted the church, multi-site, awesome, and he won't preach more than 22 times a year. And even when they were 300, he hired a teaching pastor, because he's like, if you love the environment we're creating and how relational we are,
don't make me preach every week.
Don't make me preach all the time. He's like, and he coaches the freshman basketball team at Jasper High School. And it's like, here's how I'm wired. And the church is flourishing. And he's like, and I got a teaching pastor who's better than me. He's like, I don't care. And it's just this, so you had that, but then ultimately I was going to need to continue to tweak that overall. But really my biggest thing is I told Ryder this, my leadership coach, he's like, just say it, dude. Don't worry about what the next season is or what the business is, or, you know, I wouldn't start, you know, Cabernet and Pray. I'd start bourbon and Bible.
Yes, famous sister podcast. Let's do it.
You know, like, I'm in the land of bourbon.
Bourbon and Bible. That is fantastic.
But he goes, just say it. And it felt like failure when I said it, but this was the epitome of it, of why I stepped out. I said, I would rather help a leader with their thing than lead my thing. And just saying it just felt like, you know, just, oh, I'm not a leader. This is failure. I didn't work hard enough. It's not working out. And he just goes, well, that's what I do. He's like, you want to do what I do? I'm like, Dave, I don't mean to insult you, man. I didn't mean it that way. He's like, no. You know, he was high up in Motorola and Zurich Insurance, hired him to redo HR for North America. I mean, like, all this incredible stuff. But he's like, I love helping leaders lead their thing. And that's just really, for me, that step out of it was, you know, I realize, I'm like, I have to pay more attention to that framework of, like, I've got to stay way more in my spiritual gifts. I still speak, right? I like preach for a buddy in Illinois last month, preaching for a friend in Chicago next month, you know, a couple other times this summer. It's like, I do it and I do enjoy it. And I preach in their series, like you come alongside it, right? It's like, you bless them, you have a gift, you use it. So it's not on the shelf, but it's like this idea that we, like, the only way you're going to preach is you have to be the lead pastor. There's no preaching. It's like, I think that is a misnomer that we're putting on folks. It was really the journey, but it was a 3-year journey just with myself of going, figure this out. What's wrong? Change this, do that. It's like, no, this isn't the right fit for me.
What was your favorite part and your least favorite part about the role of lead pastor for you?
Oh, man. For me, and this is so, so funny. Like, I love the details of creating environments. And I'm not talking just church service stuff, but like, we would do night of worship because Southern Indiana, everybody came home at Thanksgiving. Instead of like in a big metropolis, everybody goes home, right? So everybody came home from college and we would do nights of worship the night before Thanksgiving and then have the church fast that day. So everybody's cooking food, but you're not eating, right? And then it was like this, we celebrated all that God did that year. And then this was like my favorite thing is there was one guy, John Baines, who got up at 5 a.m. and made breakfast for all the volunteers on Sunday morning. For service in the back, eggs, everything. And we would just recognize like lead servants in the church and surprise them. And then we would make like it wasn't even expensive, but like we would brag on them. And I made them an apron that said John the Baptist Baines on it. And the whole thing was like, John, you prepared the way for everybody. You were here before everybody. Then the next weekend he's in there making eggs with his apron on, you know? And it was just this whole thing of like, and the place just, we'd call him up on stage and just thank him. Place just erupts, you know, 95% of the room doesn't even know him. It doesn't matter. And just like this, creating these things and bringing them together and the idea and the celebration of folks, it just like to get to do that stuff was for me. Like, I just love that, man, of bringing that together. And really the hardest part for me was, and you know, this, it doesn't matter what size church you're leading. The, the weight and the loneliness, and not even just the loneliness. I think it's the cost of leadership that, because you're not going to make people happy. Stuff's always coming at you, and it was just hard. I mean, just the amount of time that you're by yourself, you know, because I know you had like you know, student team, you had other roles and different stuff. And it's like when you move in that lead, like you keep moving away from people. And for me, I'm like, oh, like that's my lifeline, you know, collaboration. It's not really my middle name, but it is like, that's like, that's my lifeline. That's who I am. And when there's stuff you just delegate and you don't get to speak into and do that stuff, it's like, that's just hard for me. And then that's a lot of it. You know, you're just, you're away from things. That's tough for me.
Yeah. All right. Let's come up for air. That's heavy stuff. Let's take a drink. I'm going to ask you a drinking question and then we'll do a rapid fire round and you get to unload some rapid fire questions. So I love hearing this from people who have been drinking for years. I'm hoping you have a good one. What if I were to say, what's the best glass of wine you've ever had? Is there something that comes to mind? Is it was that one bottle or that one time or that one group or whatever? Is there a memory that comes to mind? Can you describe for us what was it?
Yeah. So, there's a wine called Carter Wines, and Mark Carter and his wife, they actually run at their winery. It's just northeast of Vista, that San Diego area, called Carter Wines. They have like 900-point wines. Like, they are ballers in the game. Well, he's doing bourbon now too, called Old Carter Bourbon. He lives here in Louisville. So he's doing a wine event. My buddy gets a couple tickets for Ruthie and I. And what was funny is he's there early, kind of walking around, and people are trying the wines. And we're sipping them, and he's talking to Ruthie, and she's like, "So who are you?" He's like,
"Ruthie, no, no."
He's like, "Well, I'm Mark Carter with Carter Wines." Like, oh, Mark. We had no idea who this guy is. And like, he's this, that's, you know, amazing, genius winemaker. And, but super kind. And then we try his wine. We're like, oh my gosh. So part of it was the whole dinner and then just watching us put our foot in our mouth. But, so there's a little bit like, yes, it's a great glass of wine, but just the whole story of meeting Mark Carter and not knowing who he is.
I love, he just holds up a bottle to you and just slowly points to the label like that's me. That's when your name is on the bottle. That's a pretty big flex. Just be like, yeah, I'm that guy, the one that's on the bottle. That's a great story. Okay. Rapid fire round. What do you see as the main issues facing Christianity in America today?
Who is Jesus? Yeah. Who is Jesus, and what does obedience to the Holy Spirit really look like?
That's good. That was very succinct and bam. Okay, I like it. Let's focus on the church. What do you see as the main issues facing the church in America today?
How do we actually make a disciple that's more than just program based?
You mean we can actually make people look more like Jesus?
Yeah, right. You know, it's like, how do we live that? How do we embody that? You know, beyond a, and I'm not anti weekend gathering, but just how does that not get all the attention from us? Right. And even right expectation, timeline expectation, you know, philosophy of how we're equipping and walk alongside folks. But
that's good.
Yeah.
What would you say is something blowing your mind right now?
God is at work even when I'm trying to figure out the work he has for me. Like, I know, I think you said it before we came on there where you're like, I'm finding some stuff. We're still dialing it in a little bit. I'm like, I have a website. I'm doing some stuff.
I have a website.
I got a, I'm doing things.
Look at me. I got a website.
I got a business card.
Mm.
No, but you know, it's like you're seeing it, you're feeling it. It's not as, you know, there's stuff that's happening, but you're like, ah. And he's, and like just blowing my mind. I'm like, you really do have this figured out, Lord. You're just letting me figure this out and process. And like what you said, sometimes like sitting in that window of don't just jump back into it. Because sometimes it can be like bad relationships. Okay, I was a lead pastor. Now just go be another lead pastor. And it's like, whoa, hang on.
Get a rebound job.
Got a rebound church.
You're my rebound church. I was going through some things and you look pretty good.
I mean, dangerous.
I think we need to make communion shirts. But talk about, is this church your rebound church? Oh,
man. First time, long time member, rebound church. Please check the box.
I'll be honest. I had a couple of rebound churches. I didn't go on staff there, but you know, after things went south for us, it was like, all right, let's try to find this again. And, you know, had a couple, it's like a bad breakup, you know, you're a little on edge. And what's interesting is you talk about, you know, I certainly relate with your sense of like, I got a website, but I don't really know, you know, what I'm doing necessarily. I think one of the hard parts in my journey, and I suspect you would relate, when I was in the lead pastor role, things made sense. Like my life made sense. My job was meaningful. My, you know, when you would ask, someone ask what you do and you explain it, they're like, wow, that's noble. You know, that is cool. And it felt cool. It felt, there was a satisfaction to the job. When I left that, you know, it's like, I don't regret it either. And I don't want to go back either. But I do miss that feeling, you know, and I wonder, is that feeling more of a drug than anything else of like that numbs you, you know, like, oh, look how great this is. And so, you know, there's many nights I lay in bed. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, what is this? What is, you know, and you know, these days trying to explain to someone what I do, it's confusing. And half the time I'm like, depending on what context I'm in, I don't even know how to explain. And, you know, oftentimes they look at me like, what is it you do? And you're all into weird stuff. And, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't know how to explain it. So it's just interesting that that's your thing you're learning. And I suspect you and I, till we die, may not have that like we once had it.
I think you're right. I mean, I'm literally just a year into it.
I'm a couple ahead of you.
And, you know, you can speak to this. Like, I would tell people if they would come on staff, I'd be like, hey, there's a 2-year culture curve here. And it's not because our culture was so, oh, it's better than your culture. I think if you go on staff at a church or even if you go to work anywhere, it's like, I think, I don't care what size it is. It's like, I think there's just a 2-year learning. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we navigated this year. Now what, like, what did we not do? What did we, you know, even how did things end when you left? You know, all that type of thing. So you'll be able to give me wisdom on that, but it is. And there's like a bunch of things I'm excited about. I mean, I checked, what is it, April 8th or whatever it is, you got your next, you know, tasting night. It's like, dude, those are so rad, man. Like, you get all these things. It's you're not doing nothing, you know. You're just going, but to your point, it's like, but it's not as succinct. Mm-hmm. It's just not as rigid. It's not as, consistent with any of that stuff. And that does, it challenges. It is challenging to your identity and what you've done.
Yeah. What's a problem you're trying to solve?
Really, for me, this is the sentiment of moments to movements. That actually came to me as the associate, but it's 10 years ago. But the idea of the organization is to help leaders navigate personal and organizational change. And really from the frameworks of navigating our deep waters, both personally, but then how do we create an organization that navigates the deep waters? And profit and all this stuff, it's like, we got to pay attention to that stuff, but there's so much more to it. And so that's the big problem that I'm loving it, man. Like working with churches that have momentum, I'm working with churches that don't, coaching a guy that's an orthodontist that, you know, it's like great friend, ministry hearted. And he's just like, I want my life to be an impact. And it's like, man, let's just dream about that. And so, but again, all those frameworks are going to apply. Everything's just in a customized setting. And that's as succinct as I can get it, is just helping people navigate personal and organizational change.
That's good. What's something you're excited about right now?
Right now? Dude, this is so rad. So two things. So Dave Ryder, who I, my leadership coach, we've come together to do some things. So we're doing, we just started, but there's six, maybe seven business guys here in Louisville that we're meeting with once a month to do this very thing. So it's a cohort and we just started. It's my first time to do it in the Louisville area. And like, I don't know, man, like I know all the guys, they don't know each other. So it's kind of like your wedding day when you get all your friends together and you know them, but they don't know each other. And you're just watching them like sharpen each other and grow. And just the fun of that. And then we're going to do another cohort that we're really excited about. Some churches across the country where it'll be the lead pastor, the chairman of the elders, and the executive pastor together in a cohort. And going, teaching the frameworks, watching through this, and then they'll get to help shape each other, the churches will. And then we'll help them, basically help them create their own organizational playbook based on this. So that way it's like, all right, we want to see deep waters come within the church. It takes a whole lot more time, intentionality, customization, and it's like, here we go. So it is. It's one of those things that you're pumped about and you're like, someone's like, well, give me a packet on that. Give me a moment.
I got a website.
I got a website, man.
Love it. Oh, that's great. All right. Last question. Is there anything you'd like to add that I have not asked you about?
Oh, man. No, dude, you got me talking about my 9-year-old self wet in the bed, dude. I if we're going to go there, we went there. Man.
We went there.
This hour and 7 minutes.
I will think of you every time I drink Mountain Dew now, I think.
Just start giggling. Just
my friend Nate.
Pour a little out for me. He's at the window of the drive through. Put a little Baja Blast on the pavement.
There you go.
No, man, this has been fun.
Well, Nate, I appreciate your time, dude. This has been a blast to catch up with you. Love what you're doing. So if people want to check it out, you have a website, momentstomovements.com, right?
That's it.
That's the best place to send them.
Yep. Yeah, that's the best one. I'm on, Twitter as well. You can find me, Nate Ross 44, but momentstomovements.com is the easiest. And anybody love to chat or talk more, let me know. But yeah, no, I'm just honored to be on the show and grateful to be your friend, man.
Well, the website looks good, dude. It's hey, a slick website. When you built it, you sent it to me. I was like, ooh, you look legit now. Nate, in all seriousness, dude, you are one of the guys. I think the world of you. I have watched you live out your faith for however long we've been friends, we didn't never figure that out, but I think it's over a decade. And it's been cool to see how our lives and our stories have overlapped in so many of these areas, and then getting to walk this with you. And again, you know, I hope people who are you know, have been in this episode realize we both have stepped away from the ministry, but there's no bitterness there. There's no animosity. There's no hatred. There's a sense of like, hey, there's something new, and this is good. And I think that's, we need to be able to demonstrate more of that. And so that's why I love people hearing your story and seeing how you're doing. And if you need a coach, you need someone to help you level up. Nate is an incredible guy. Maybe not your social media. He may not be able to dial in your social media, but he will help you figure out the 9-year-old version of you, and he'll take you there. So check out momentstomovement.com. Thank you guys for dialing in to another episode. Whether you watched or listened, we're so grateful for you. We will see you guys all for the next episode of Cabernet and Pray. Thanks, friends.
Thanks for joining us for Cabernet and Pray. We'd love to hear what you thought of today's episode or what you'd like to see more of in the future. You can email us at cheers@communionwineco.com. And if you like this episode, please consider leaving us a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us online at communionwineco.com.